All right, Rabbi Osai, good morning. Let's begin. Today's daf is Yud Aleph. We're actually going to begin on Yud Amud Beis. So let's actually pick up, because we read it a little bit, I read it a little bit quickly yesterday. Can't put the blame on you. I ran through it a little bit quickly yesterday towards the end of the shir. Let's pick up. It's 2, 4, 6, 8 lines up from the bottom, Yud Amud Beis. So the Gemara introduces a new sugi. The Gemara says, Amr Rabbi Chizkiya Tana, Rabbi Yehuda Gad Gonios, Hashulchan v'hamenora v'hamizbechos v'haparuches, me'akvim es ha-carbon div Rabbi Meir. So I'll say, Rabbi Chizkiya, in the name of all these other individuals, introduces a new sugi, which is, and this is a fascinating idea, what do you need, what utensil-wise do you need in the Beis HaMikdash in order for carbonos to be kosher? So meaning, how much are the presence of the other utensils ma'agi? So says Rabbi Meir, that the truth is you need everything. You need ultimately the shulchan, the menorah, the mizbeach, the paroches, and if you don't have it, it's ma'akev the carbon. The chum say, Now, again, as I pointed out yesterday, the Tiklin Charetin changes the girsa from Kior Ta'akan to Karkov and Karen. So we'll say, what is Karkov and Karen? As I mentioned yesterday, Karkov refers to the decorative band around the Mizbeach itself. And Karen refers to the, Karen literally horns, represents the fact that on the corners of the Mizbeach, there were protrusions that extended upwards. If you don't have those things, they're ma'akev the carbon. So we'll say, interestingly enough, what Rabbi Meir essentially is saying is, in order for the carbon to be effective, all of the trappings of the Beis HaMikdash have to be in place, whereas according to the Chachamim, what really has to be intact is the Mizbeach. The Mizbeach, okay. Rabbi Elazar comes along and says the following. He says the truth is, everything depends on how the Torah addresses a particular issue. If the Torah uses the lashon of nochach, meaning sometimes the Torah will say that you will place a certain utensil nochach opposite another, so wherever it says nochach, nochach means that you have to have that utensil there in order for the karbonos to be effective. Because it will say, it's almost like what the Gemara is saying over here, is that the word nochach opposite represents an idea of being fixed in place, as opposed to tzela, which means on the side of. On the other hand, you have Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, who says the name of Rabbi Yonasan, that even Sela, no, even if it just says on the side, that's Ma'akev as well. Rabbi Shmuel Bar Nachman, Afilu Sima Ma'akev. So Bosa again comes along, Rabbi Ila, name of Rabbi Shmuel, and says, even if the Torah uses the Lashon of Sima, it's Ma'akev. Take a look at the Tiklin Charetin, Sima, Hainu Vayosim, this sof parshas vayakel ha'amur ba'aron u'mizbechos u'paroches u'shardvarim the kulam akvim. So also it comes along Rabbi Ila and says that even the lashon of sima, which just means placement, that's also ma'akiv. That also shows you that a utensil is indispensable. Also, obviously, this is a very serious machlokes, because the shaila is what happens if you don't have something. Like, for example, we know in the second Beis HaMikdash, they did not have the aron. So, for example, according to Reb Ila, b'shem the name of Reb Shmuel, they would not have been permitted to offer up karbanos in the second Beis HaMikdash. Obviously, we don't pass like this particular opinion, and we pass like one of the ones above, but l'maisa, again, it's fascinating to see what are the basic elements necessary in order to ensure for a functioning Beis HaMikdash. All right, so the Gemara says the following. Rabbi Chanina says the following. This is not a machlokes. Kan ba'avodas shebifnim, kan ba'avodas shebachutz. Some are referring to the avoda on the inside of the Beis HaMikdash in the Kodesh, and others are referring to the avoda in the Azar. Take a look at the Tiklin Charetin again. Kan ba'avodas, what was it? Right-hand corner, right beneath the Karbon Ha'ida, Rivivan, Tiklin Charetin. Kan ba'avodas pnim. So we'll say, apparently, when it comes to the avoda on the inside of the Beis HaMikdash, so for that avoda to occur, all of the various pieces of the Beis HaMikdash must be in place. However, Avodas Chutz, Svir Lei Chachamim, De'eno Ma'akev Ela Keren Vekarkov. But apparently, again, for the Avoda on the outside of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning outside of the Kodesh, let's say in the courtyard, that all you require is the Karkov, all you require is the decorative band around the Mizbeach, as well as the Keren, as well as the horns. The Gemara goes weiter. Amar Rabbi Chanina. Rabbi Chanina said the following, and this is actually, again, quite fascinating. Shachatzis gidola haisa bibnei kohanim. There was great arrogance on the part bibnei kohanim gidolim. There was great arrogance on the part of the kohanim gidolim. That's what, if you look at the Tikkun Charet, and he says, shachatzis is gasus. Great arrogance on their part. Why? Listen to this. Sheyoser mishishim ki kare zahav hayumotzim ba. They used to often spend more than 60 kikarim of gold, shehaya kivsa shapara omed, because there was still a ramp for the paraduma, for lo haya echan mehen motzei paraso bekivsho shel chavero. So we'll say, listen to this. So remember we saw yesterday that the Mishnah talked about the idea that one of the things from which you could go ahead and use the shekel for was the construction of the ramp for the paraduma. We pointed out before, the paraduma was taken from the Harabayis to Harazesim, and there was a ramp, a massive ramp. It's not really a ramp, it's a bridge. It's, meaning if you look, if you stand in Harazesim, you'll notice that there's a valley in between Harabayis and Harazesim. So it's not just like the pshat, like a ramp. It's not like a little ramp you'd build up to your house. This is a bridge. This is a bridge. So the Gemara says over here that there was great arrogance on the part of the Kohanim Gidolim. Why? Because each one would build their own ramp for their own para aduma. No one would ever use the ramp of his fellow Kohen Gadol. Ela sosro ubona osem yishalo. But rather, what would they do? They would demolish their, meaning there could have been a perfectly good para aduma ramp. Right, I'm sorry. The views expressed do not reflect. It would have been a perfectly good bridge standing right there, and yet what? The Kohen Gadol would have demolished it and rebuilt a new one. So the Gemara says the following. So the Gemara says, so Hesiv Rabbi Ula Kumeit Rabbi Mana. So Rabbi Ula raised a cash in front of Rabbi Mana, and he said the following. 1 second. V'hot honey, Shimon HaTzadik, Shtei Paros Asa. But Rabbi says again, Shimon HaTzadik, remember who is Shimon HaTzadik? You know, it's in Pirkei Avos. Shimon HaTzadik, Haya Mishayarei Knesset HaGedola. He was one of the last members of the Anshei Knesset HaGedola. Remember, men of the Great Assembly, Anshei Knesset HaGedola, are individuals who are most active in between the first and second temple periods. So Shimon HaTzadik, you can go to Shimon HaTzadik's kever. Shimon HaTzadik is buried in East Yerushalayim, right by the Silwan, not far from the Silwan Valley. He's a big, now you can actually go to his kever. I'm saying, for a while you couldn't go to his kever. Now you can go to his kever. So Shimon, interestingly enough, right next to Shimon HaTzadik's kever, there's another fascinating, they call it the kever of the Sanhedrin HaKatan. Now, it's not because nobody important, I mean, everybody's important, but it's not that great people are buried there. It's they discovered this massive burial cave. Remember, what used to happen in Eretz Yisrael, we've actually discussed this before, is land was always at a premium in Eretz Yisrael. So what would they do? People would have family plots. But what people would do is they would have burial caves. So there would be slabs of, they'd hew out slabs of rock in the burial caves. They'd place bodies in these caves. When the bodies would decompose, they would collect the bones, a process called likot atzamos, and then inter the bones in the family plot. Obviously, you use up a lot less land burying bones than you would burying a body. So they unearthed one of these massive burial caves right next to the kever of Shimon HaTzadik. It's quite amazing. So in any event, the Gemara says that in the days of Shimon HaTzadik, Shimon HaTzadik did two para adumas. Now that is like a Kohanic, a Kohen Gadol record. No one ever did two para, because think about it, para aduma was very rare. So what ended up happening was, you remember, from one para aduma you can get a lot of ash, and that can last you for a long time. So whatever is happening over here, there is a lot of tumas meis during the days of Shimon HaTzadik. Whether it's because they're waging some battles, they're waging some wars, or something else happened, but there is an incredible amount of tumas meis. So much that they went through two para adumas. See, right over here, the Shimon HaTzadik, Shtei Paros Asa, Lo bekevesh shahotzia zeh. And yet, Shimon HaTzadik, he built a bridge for the first one, and then he built another bridge for the second one, and he wouldn't use the same bridge. And both sides, the Gemara makes an assumption. Shimon HaTzadik was a great tzadik. Obviously, you know, whenever your last name is tzadik, I'm saying that's big stuff. So the idea is, the Gemara says, it can't be that he did this because of arrogance. There's got to be some other explanation for the behavior. So the Gemara says the following. The Gemara says, "Lo bekevesh otzi azeh hotzi azeh." Is the chalameimar Shimon HaTzadik shachatzaya? Can you say that Shimon HaTzadik was arrogant? Makidon. So why? But yet, why did he build a second bridge? The assumption is that the first bridge would have still been intact. Al shem ma'alahi bepara silsulhi bepara. To which the Gemara answers, "We're supposed to take a look." Take a look at the Tiklin Charetin. So ma'ala bepara means in order to highlight the special nature of para aduma or silsul covered. So also what the Gemara now suggests is that part of this idea of going ahead and constructing a new bridge was in order to impress upon the populace the importance of this particular process, was to impress upon the people the idea that something exceptionally important is happening over here, and therefore, how do you show people that something important is happening over here? Construction project. In fact, listen to this, I'll say, this is amazing. So the Gemara says, Tani, we also learned, when it came to this bridge that they built for Paraduma, Zizim Uksalim, Hayu Yotzin Mikan Umikan. Now, I will say, interesting enough, what did this bridge look like? So, Zizin literally means protrusions, but Uksalim means walls. So, this was not an open bridge, but rather, this bridge had walls. Why? Kidei Shelo Yatsitsu HaKohanim V'yitmu. In order that the Kohanim literally should not look over and become Tameh. What does this mean? Take a look at the Tiklin Charetin. Shelo Yatsitsu HaKohanim HaMolichim HaPara B'dvarm HaMavien Osunli De Tumah Adir Iyah. Now this is very interesting. We know that Tumah is Ola Ubakas Adlarakia. Tumah ultimately, if it's not contained, ascends upwards all the way until the heavens, which means that technically speaking, if you are walking somewhere, it's just some walking, and you hunch over Tuma, that you become Tame. Similar to something amazing. But also remember, understand, we know exactly where this bridge went. So imagine, remember, Hara Zesim was used as a burial ground already from ancient times. From ancient times, we know again, right? Avshalom is buried. We know it. So what happened? So what's the concern? So obviously, when they constructed the ramp, they had to construct the ramp in a way that it bypassed graves. What was the concern? That as the Kohen is taking the paradumah, what may he do? He may lean over the side, and if he leans over the side and there is a grave there, he becomes tameh. Obviously, the Kohen becomes tameh. I like to do the paradumah is not going to be exceptionally helpful. So what would they do? They essentially would build walls along the path in the entire way of the bridge in order that the Kohen should not look over the side and to become Tamei. So also what comes out is that yes, historically, apparently every Kohen Gadol built his own bridge. But interesting for his own Paraduma, but apparently, now remember, I want to point out, not every Kohen Gadol did a Paraduma, but apparently those who did do a Paraduma, everyone built their own bridge. They did it for different reasons. Apparently some did it for their own covet, but others like Shimon HaTzadik did it in order to impress upon the general populace the importance of the process that is going to unfold with the Paraduma, and by undertaking the construction project and not relying on previous construction projects, they were showing this is important. Okay, we'll say, by the way, it also helps to understand why very often they used their own funds, which is fascinating. Why did they use their own funds? Because it could be that there were times when the construction of another bridge was not necessary. To use public communal funds when it's not necessary is not so poshut. But if the Kohen wants to go ahead and say, listen, I think this is important because it impresses upon the general populace just the importance of Paraduma, of course you have the prerogative to do with your money as you please. It's just interesting how everything ties together. Okay, weiter. Rabbi Kiva Omer Emistakrim. So Moshe, if you remember again, we had a fundamental machlokas in the Mishnah. And what was the fundamental machlokas? The Mishnah dealt with the following situation, that Rabbi Akiva said Rabbi Akiva said that if you have leftover money, so remember again, the Mishnah went through a whole list of the things that you use the half shekel for. So what happens if at the end of this list, you still have surplus funds? So I paid for my Sir Mishtaleach and my red wool and the carbonos and everything, and mamish, there's still money in the bank. So what do you do with it? So remember again, Rabbi Akiva's suggestion was that you go ahead and, Rabbi Yishmael, who was it? Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel's suggestion was what? That you go ahead, you use the leftover money, purchase wine, oil, and flour, and sell it, resell it at a profit to those who come and need it for the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Akiva said, Ein mistakrin behekdish. We do not engage in profit-making ventures with sanctified sacrificial items. And by the way, Rabbosai, Rabbi Akiva also holds this where? By tzedakah. By tzedakah, that you don't undertake investment opportunities with money that belongs to the Beis HaMikdash, nor do you undertake investment opportunities with money of aniyim. So the Gemara says the following. Ela imratza, but what can you do? We'll say, this is actually quite fascinating. Ela imratza, yeyeh ha-hefsid shalo, v'aschar lehekdish mutter. So we'll say, what can you do? You could arrange, you can make an arrangement where you bear the loss, but you share in the profit. Now, what does that mean? Take a look at the Tiklin Charatin. He says the following. He says, "In mistakrim b'shal hekdish, ela im kein rotze yehi ha'hefsid shalo v'haschar lehekdish." We'll say there is a concept like this. We'll read this more in Tiklin Charatin in just a moment. There's a concept like this where you could enter into a financial arrangement where you say to your financial partner like this, I am willing to undertake 100% of the loss. If there's a loss, chas v'shalom, I personally will bear it, but if there's a profit, we'll split the proceeds. We'll split the proceeds. We'll see what that terms in just a moment. So therefore, the Gemara says the following. Rabbi Akiva says that if somebody wants to undertake on behalf of the Beis HaMikdash an investment opportunity for the money of the Beis HaMikdash and essentially guarantee the principal, if we're going to guarantee the principal and share in the profits, that you could do with the money of the Beis HaMikdash. Why? What's the logic? Because, again, obviously, then the principal is secure. So he goes on, he says, Kehada bar zamina ispakid gabe madal diyasmin. Like this guy, bar zamina. I was just like this guy, I don't know who he is. Right? Like this man, bar zamina. Bar Zemina was given money of orphans. So we'll say he essentially was an executor of an estate. So he was given money of orphans, and what did he do? Vishal the Rabbi Mana, and he asked Rabbi Mana if he could do the following, if he could go ahead and invest the money of the orphans. Amarle, and Rabbi Mana said to him, In bois de ha-hafsada didach, va-igra de tarvaychon shari, if you're willing to invest it in a way that the loss is yours, but the profit is split between both of you, then it's permitted. Take a look at the Tiklin Charatin again. Tiklin Charatin says, di ha-hafsada didach de tarvaychon, va-hachi masik be-bavli, perakei de bab-mazia. So we'll say, we will get to this soon. In bab-mazia, the Gemara discusses, Mo'os shall yisomim. If you have money that belongs to orphans, we'll say, remember, money that belongs to orphans is also treated very carefully because that is the future of the orphans. So therefore, mutar lahavosan, we'll say, remember this term, karov lischar v'rachok mehefsid. That is the Talmudic term for the arrangement we just described before. Karov lischar, which means again a venture that will very readily realize profit, v'rachok mehefsid. But there is no possibility of a loss. V'hainu k'deparish Rashi shayonotlin hayisomim chelik bischar, because in this case again, where let's say you would invest the money of the orphans, so the orphans would take some part of the profit. V'ein notlin chelik behefsid, but they are totally shielded from any kind of loss. Aval ribis mamshal. But I will say, interestingly enough, we're not going to get into this now. The reason why the Gemara Maseches Bava Metzia Parak Hay is Parak Ezu Neshech, which talks about ribis interest. The reason why this is interesting is because this appears to be to the Gemara a ribis transaction. Because any time that ultimately the risk is assumed fully by one of the parties and the profit is shared by both, that takes on a certain ribis dimension. The Gemara says, however, again, it's not biblical ribis. It's only, not only, but it's rabbinic ribis. And essentially the rabbis suspended their prohibitions in certain cases like sanctified money, based on Mikdash money, like ultimately orphans' money. Because I will say, in these cases, understand what we're trying to do. We're trying, on one hand, obviously, if you just let the money sit in the savings account, so nothing's going to happen with it. And the problem is, your principal is not going to grow. On the other hand, any investment opportunity brings with it significant risk, which for the Yisomim could compromise them financially for the Beis Hamikdash. So therefore, since this type of transaction of karov l'schar, rachok mehefsid, where one party undertakes all of the risk but agrees to share the profits, since this is only rabbinically prohibited, so therefore l'maisa Chazal allowed it in two specific cases, Yisomim and Kodesh. So he goes weiter. Rabbi Chiya bar Ada ispaket gabe madal di Yisomim. Similarly, the Gemara says that Rabbi Chiya bar Ada went ahead and he also was entrusted with the money of Yisomim va'avid kain, and he did the same thing. Okay, well, so just a fascinating, again, you'll just remember it, karov l'schar rachok mehefsid is allowed in certain specific cases. Says the Gemara, Moser Peros. So, Moser, if you remember again, one of the other interesting things we had in the Mishnah was what? That the Mishnah talked about this case where Rabbi Shmuel says, Moser Peros, Ketz HaMizbeach, literally, the leftover of the peros go to the dessert of the Mizbeach, the carbon fund in the Beis HaMikdash. So the problem is, we have no idea what Moser Peros is. So the Gemara says the following. Masnisin Rabbi Shmoli. Our Mishnah reflects the view of Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, Paser Masnisa, because Rabbi Shmuel bar Yosef understood the Mishnah dealing the following way. Moser Peros, Schar Lehekdish. Literally, the profits go to Hekdish through the sale of wine and oil. So that's how, according to Rabbi Chiya, that's what Rabbi Shmuel is saying. That when they went ahead and they would sell wine and oil, according to Rabbi Shmuel, because remember, this is one ongoing Rabbi Shmuel. Rabbi Shmuel is the one who said that if you have leftover monies to begin with, what do? You go ahead and you invest in wine, oil, and flour. And then you go ahead and you use those proceeds. Those proceeds come to the Beis HaMikdash. Then Rabbi Shmuel follows up and says, oh, and what are the proceeds used for? The proceeds are used for Ketz HaMizbeach. They go to Hekdish. Okay, Mosar Nesachim, what is considered to be the leftover of Nesachim? So also again, according to this approach, Mosar Peros refers to the profits realized by this through the sale of wine, oil, and flour that was purchased with the leftover half shekels. Mosar Nesachim, what does it mean when it says leftover wine libations? Mosar Nesachim, Zu Sa'a Revius. Now this is very interesting as well. This refers to the fourth sa'ah. What's the fourth sa'ah? Look at the Tiklin Charetin again. Tiklin Charetin, sa'ah dal, it's actually the first wide line in the Tiklin Charetin. Kida amr lekamon, as we'll see later on, bepirkin, ha-mekabel alav l'sapek salasos midalit sin besela, va'amdu megimol yisapek dalid, u'ma shemistaker, hekdish, Sa'adalit, Nikra Moser Nesachim. So listen to this. We will see later on that what happened is the Beis HaMikdash entered into long-term buying agreements with certain vendors. But it's amazing. What would happen with those agreements? What happened with those agreements is the following. So let's say I would lock in. I'd say I'm the Gizbar. I'm the temple CFO. I would go ahead and speak to Reuven. He's my local flour salesman. I'd say, Reuven, listen, here's the deal. We're going to enter into a financial agreement. What does wheat cost right now? So what wheat costs right now is I can get 4 sa'ah for a sella. Let's call it. Is that what he said? 4 sa'ah for a sella? Yeah, 4 sa'ah for a sella. We lock it in. But here's what's interesting. When you did business with the Beis HaMikdash, there was an understanding that, again, Beis HaMikdash is always gets the better end of the deal. So, for example, if the price of wheat goes up, and now it's only what? 3 sa'ah for a sellah, I am still locked in to my contract. I still get 4 sa'ah for a sellah. On the other hand, if the price of wheat goes down, and it's 5 sa'ah for a sellah, I get the benefit of current market prices. So Beis HaMikdash always gets the better end of the other. They are always secure, and if the fluctuation is to their benefit, they get to enjoy the fluctuation. So I'm also listen to this. So let's say now you had a situation where the price of wheat goes up, and now it's really the market's only getting 3 sa'ah for the sellah. you're getting for a sa'a for the sa'as, and in reality, you have gotten more for your money. So that's what the Gemara calls, mosar nesachim. So mosar nesachim, the leftover of the nesachim, zus sa'a revius. That refers ultimately to this fourth sa'a in a situation where wheat price or flour prices go up. Rabbi Yochanan pasar masnisa. Rabbi Yochanan understood it differently. So I'll say again, according to this first approach, so mosar peros refers to the sale of the wine, the flour, and the oil from money from that was bought with extra half shkalim, and mosar nesachim refers to the fact that if there's a spike in wheat prices, you ended up getting more than the rest of the market will get. Rabbi Yochanan says no. He says mosar peros, zus sa'a revius. So Rabbi Yochanan says mosar peros actually refers to that fourth sa'a. Mosar nesachim leberutzin. I will say Beirutzin is very interesting also. Beirutzin literally means the topping off of the flour. The English word that's used is overbrimming. So apparently overbrimming is a technical commerce term that refers to what? When you pour stuff over the brim. It's overbrimming. Okay, so look what the Tiklin Chalitin says. He says, Mosar Nesachim LeBeirutzin, third wide line down, Mosar Nesachim LeBeirutzin, Hainu Beirutzei HaGodshin, Shenitan LeHegdish, VaHegdish Mocher Belo Godesh, Ze Mosar Nesachim. Also listen to this. So when the vendor would go ahead and actually give flour to the Beis HaMikdash, so what would he do? The vendors understood, you overbrimmed. You engaged in Beirutzin. But interestingly enough, when the Beis HaMikdash resold flour to people, they did not overbrim. They went ahead and they gave the exact amount, which means what? There is a surplus there of flour right there. So he says, so therefore Rabbi Yochanan says that Mosar Nesachim, that refers to Beiritzin. So the Gemara says, Valesle, the Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef, the Beiritzin. Now I will say, this is the first opinion of Rabbi Chiya Bar Yosef, not hold that there is this Beiritzin, this overbrimming. So Amrav Chizkiya, Ma Dinafal Sa'aravias, Nafal Beiritzin. Simon says, no, he agrees with Beirutzin. But he says essentially the fourth sa'a, which again is the case in the case of the appreciation of this, an increase in the price of wheat, goes to the same pot that the Beirutzin goes to. Okay. Al daite de Rabbi Chiya bar Yosef, necha, ein mistakrin b'shal hekdish. Af lo b'shalaniyim, lefichach ze veze lo hayim odim b'peros. So we'll say again, according to Rav Chiya bar Yosef, I understand that since no one is actually doing commerce with hekdish, or for that matter with tzedakah funds, therefore again, there's no real discussion about peros. Because most remember, as we said before, peros is the realization of the profits from the sale of wine, oil, and flour. Now that there's only profits in the sale of wine, oil, and flour of what? If you've actually purchased wine, oil, and flour for resale, which you're only doing if you believe that you can engage in some limited amount of commerce with money of the Beis HaMikdash. But if you're not, if you don't believe that you can do that, then by definition, there's no peros of those sales. Al daiti Rabbi Yochanan kasha. But according to the approach of Rabbi Yochanan, there's a kasha. V'hataninan amdu migimel yisapek midalid. V'taninan ze v'ze lo hayumodim peros. So we'll say, look at Tiklin Charetin for just a moment. Tiklin Charetin says, Al daste bishmal kasha, taninu amdu gimel mi gimel yisapik, va'aleha les man de polig, ve'hecha shaykh lemimer ze ve'ze lo hayumodim beperos, I perusha de perus hu sa'adas. We're supposed to listen to this. So the Gemara said one more time, Al daite Rabbi Yochanan kasha. Rabbi Yochanan, there's a kasha ever. Why? Va'ha taninan amdu mi gimel yisapik mi dalid. That even lemaisa, again, if the price of wheat went down to gimel, he'll still get dalid. Vitaninan ze v'ze lo hayumodim beperos. And yet it says in the Mishnah, it says in the Brice actually, both ze v'ze lo hayumodim beperos, both did not agree in the case of peros. Lo hayumod, so the Gemara says, no. Lo hayumodim beperos lekeitim is beach. So I will say, according to this approach of Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Shmuel, where what? They agree that there is some limited amount of commerce that can be done with the leftover half shekels. And therefore, again, you can purchase wine and oil and flour for the sake of some limited amount of resale. Again, in the structure type of ranges that we spoke about before. So what they argued about was where the profits would go. Lo hayumodin beperus beketz hamizbeach. Ava modin hayu bekli shari. So we'll say we see now that fundamental machlokas is, can you even engage in any level of commerce with the profits of the Beis HaMikdash. Rabbi Shmuel, when I say profits, in this case we're referring to specifically over here, leftover half shekels. So Rabbi Shmuel says, yes. Again, Rabbi Shmuel says, remember, in a structured arrangement. And Rabbi Akiva says, no. The question is, would Rabbi Akiva agree in a case of Karov Lischar and Rachok Mehefsid? So that remains unclear over here. And the second Machlokis is, even if you agree that some level of commerce can be done with these particular coins, left over half shekel, then what? Then what do you do with them? So some say ultimately that they will go to the Ketz HaMizbeach, to the carbon fund that's used in the event that the Mizbeach is dormant. They would bring additional carbonos. And others say no, what it would be used for is what? Is to ultimately repair the klisharis. Okay, so the Gemara goes weiter. So first of all, you should just know, the way we pass in Halacha Lamaisa is like Rabbi Akiva, that we do not engage in commerce with the money of Yisomim, with the money of Tzedakah, nor with the money of the Beis HaMikdash, with the exception, Rabbi Osai, of this particular Karav L'Schar Rachok Mehefsid. If somebody is literally willing to guarantee the money of the Beis HaMikdash or the money of Yisomim and say, you know what, I guarantee the principle, and obviously when you guarantee the principle, you have to back that up with something. But if you guarantee the principle and agree to share the profits, we would allow for that type of transaction. Ad kidon beirot tzibur. So Bosa, listen to this. So the Gemara says, until now, what we've been speaking about is the overbrimming of karbanos tzibur. Of collective karbanos. So the Gemara, look at the Tiklin Charetin for just a moment. Tiklin Charetin says, Ad kidon beirutzi tzibor, distama naket leberutzin, vizulo beirutzin tzibor. So we'll say, so up until now, we've been referring to the overbrimming of the tzibor. And that overbrimming of the tzibor is that additional wheat, not the additional flour, is used to go ahead and repair the klisharis. Afilu beirutzi yachid. What about the overbrimming on a personal carbon? Right? Let's say somebody brings a personal carbon to the Beis HaMikdash. Can we go ahead and use that overbrimming for Kli Sharis as well? So we'll say, right, remember, so when we spoke about overbrimming initially, what we're talking about is the Beis HaMikdash purchases fine flour. There's overbrimming on the actual flour they bought. So what do you do with the value of that additional flour? You sell it off, and you use those proceeds to repair the Kli Sharis. What happens if I bring a carbon mincha, and now there's overbrimming? You know, I donated an additional amount of flour. So what happens? That cannot be used for Kli Sharis as well. And Rabosai, remember, this goes back to our fundamental Shaila yesterday and the day before, which is, can individual items be converted for communal use? So can I take a carbon yachid, which is now offered, and can that be converted for communal use of the Kli Sharis? Kumar says, V'lo nimtzu Kli Sharis by Mishal Yachid. But how can we do that? If I allow for that, does that not essentially mean that Karbanos Tzibor, and these Kli Sharis will be coming from individual contributions? And I remember again, anything that belongs to the tzibor has to mamish belong to the tzibor. Kehad v'tanim, bro. The Gemara says, one second, what do we learn? Isha she'asasa ketonos lipna. Well, so we learn this case. Remember, the mother of the Kohen Gadol is very proud of her son. So what does she do? She makes for him his big day kahuna. So the Gemara says, it works. However, as long as what? Kshera. It works as long as what, Rabosai? As long as she actively gives it over to the tzibor. So what do you see from there? That private property can indeed be converted to public property. So the Gemara goes weiter. So the Gemara says, Ad kidon beirutzei lach. Afilu beirutzei yavesh. Further, Rabosai, here's what's interesting. For some reason, the Gemara says that the more obvious case of overbrimming is a case of liquid overbrimming. Now, for example, again, where did you have liquid in the Beis HaMikdash? There's only two major liquids, which are water and oil. Excuse me, oil and wine. Now, what's the chap with both oil and wine? Because they are thick substances, there's a significant amount of surface tension. What's the chap with surface tension? So if you ever look, if you go ahead and you pour wine, you could actually pour more wine than, you could actually pour more wine than the cup holds, right? Why? Because ultimately, again, the surface tension holds everything together. That's called overbrimming. So the Gemara says, we take it for granted. Take a look at the Tiklin Charetin. He says, Ad kidon beirutzei lach, lo mi bai beirutzei lach, shein kodesh. It's obvious that the overbrimming of liquid measures are kodesh, kmo shkasa b'menachos, midas halach beirutzein kodesh, imishum dinim shchumim bifnim, umi bachutz. Because we'll say, again, what's interesting over there is, when it comes to liquid, so liquid is always considered to be one entity. When it's steaming, meaning you can't really separate off the liquid on the top, because liquid we consume is always in a constant state of intermingling. So it's understood that the overbrimming of lach of liquid measures is obviously considered to be kodesh. What about vafilu berutzi yavish? What about overbrimming of salad? I'm about to say overbrimming of salad. What could you easily do? What can you do? You could go ahead and you could skim it off the top. So what is that also considered to be yavish as well? So kihahi detanin on taman hanesochim shekitshu bekli. So I will say, what do we learn? We learn about the fact that if you have a libation that was sanctified within a kli, and then the carbon, remember, nisachim are not brought on their own. Nisachim are brought as an accompaniment to something else. Let's say you're going to bring a nesach for a particular carbon, and then it turns out that the carbon is pasul. So what happens? Im yesh zevach acher yikrivu imo. If there's another carbon, so bring this nesach with this other carbon. Ve'im lav, but if there's not another carbon to be offered, yufsalu belino. Then ultimately it becomes pasul with lina. Pasul with lina means you leave it overnight and essentially becomes disqualified, and then you go ahead and what? And then you go ahead and you destroy it. And I will say, why is this important for us? Because what this tells us is, that Lamaisa, the only time a Nesech becomes Kodesh is when it's put inside of a Kli Sharis. That's why in this particular case over here, what happens? I have my whole carbon ready to go, which means, again, my carbon's ready to go, my Nesach and my libations are also in my Kli Sharis, in my consecrated utensil. So what does the Braisa say? If the carbon is now invalid, I can't offer up the Nesach. If there's another carbon, great, I can go ahead and I can offer it up with that other carbon, but if there's no other carbon to be offered, my Nesach and my Pasul. Why are my Nesach and Pasul? They're Pasul because they're already sanctified within a Kli Sharis, sanctified utensil. And therefore, again, there's no going back once it's in a Kli Sharis. What does that tell us? That the only time it becomes Kodesh is when it's in a Kli Sharis. If it's not in a Kli Sharis, then it's not Kodesh. Why is this important for us to both sides? Because when you have overbrimming of a dry measure, what essentially has happened? That overbrim part was never in a Kli Sharis. Because it was never in a Kli Sharis, technically speaking, it's not Kodesh. Because remember, again, as opposed to liquid, which is all intermingled and therefore all considered to be within a Kli Sharis, even though, again, there's overbrimming, solid measures, they build up on each other. So the part on top was never in the Kli Sharis, therefore it was never Kodesh. Therefore, again, in a technical sense, you'd be able to shave off that amount and use it for some type of non-consecrated use. Next Mishnah. Moser HaKetoros Mahayu Osimba. Was another very interesting case. When you had leftover Ketoros, what would you do with it? Now, the Tikkun Charetin goes through this. We're not going to go through this now. There was always leftover Ketoros. Even though, again, they measured out pretty much like exactly enough Ketoros to the year, there was always leftover Ketoros. So what would you do with it? Mahayu Osimba. Listen to this. Mafrishin Mimena Schar Ha'umnin. They would separate from it to pay the artisans. Well, so remember, there were artisans who used to work in the Beis HaMikdash, so they would pay the artisans with Ketoros. Now, you'll see what that means in just a moment. Umechalalin Osa Al Maos Ha'omnin, they would deconsecrate the Ketores on the money of the Umnin, Vinosnin Osa Lo Umnin Bischaron, and they would then give it to the artisans as their wages. Now, I will say, what it sounds like it's describing over here is the following, that the Beis HaMikdash would go ahead and have money that was set aside for the artisans. They would deconsecrate the Ketores on the money, transfer the sanctity of the Ketores onto the money, and pay the artisans with Ketores. Okay, so what would happen then? V'chozun v'lochin osa mitrumah chadashin. I will say, what's the issue? The issue is that, remember how this whole thing is set up. The Beis HaMikdash works on a financial year from 1 Nisan to 31 Adar. That's how it works, which means that all monies collected are used in that year. And ultimately, again, any animals purchased or any items purchased have to be used up in that year. Anything that's not used in that year cannot just simply be rolled over to the next. That's true of money. It's true of animals that were purchased. It's true of wine, oil, flour, Ketores. So what would happen? If you had leftover Ketores, what you wanted to do, essentially what they're really doing over here, is they're deconsecrating, bless you, they're deconsecrating the Ketores, and then what? In an effort to reconsecrate it. Because essentially, once it's deconsecrated and then bought back by the Beis HaMikdash, that's like what? that's like brand new ketores. So it was a way ultimately of being able to use up the ketores, but not running into the problem of using old ketores for the New Year's activities. So again, they had to pay the artisans. They'd have, let's say, we'll call it 100 dinar for the artisans. They would so the Beis Hamikdash had the artisans' wages. They would deconsecrate the ketores onto the money. So now the money was kadosh. The Torahs was not. They'd pay the artisans with the ketores. Then what was next? And then what would they do? They would repurchase the ketores from the artisans. This time what? This time using newly collected money. So now remember, after one Nisan, new Shkalim are in, Beis Hamikdash should repurchase the ketores from the artisans. When they repurchase it, what happens, Jabosai? Sanctity of the ketores, of the monies, are transferred onto the ketores. The monies become chulin. The artisans now have their money. Again, once one Nisan came, first the Nisan came, they would repurchase the ketores regardless. If the new monies came in, they would repurchase with the new monies. And if they were just old monies, they'd repurchase the old money. So we'll say, again, it's just a fascinating setup that allowed it. What's beautiful about it is everybody gets what they need. The artisans will get their money, because remember, nobody really wants to get paid in ketores, as wonderfully holy as it sounds. Right? Of course, I'll get paid in ketores. I'd rather have cash. But at the end of the day, the Beis Hamikdash is also able to repurchase the ketores and nothing goes to waste. Also, just by the way, an incredible, incredible model in efficiency. And nothing gets thrown out. Everything, because remember, what is it? Just throw the ketores out. It's left, or burn it. Just get rid of it. It's leftover. And remember, how expensive can ketores be? Actually, ketores is quite expensive. By leaving that aside, an incredible model in efficiency. Take a look at the Gemara. The Gemara says, I don't understand what you're doing. Normally, in order to deconsecrate something, you have to take something that's holy and redeem it with something that is not sanctified. In the case of the Mishnah, what happened over here? The artisans did their work. You have their wages set aside. Now, those wages are kodesh, because that's temple money. What you were then describing was what? You were then going to go ahead and deconsecrate the ketores on the money. But what are you essentially doing? You are trying to deconsecrate something that is holy on something that is holy also. How does that work? So the Gemara says, no. Ketzeru Osa, what do you do? Amri B'shin Rabosa is amazing. Arushin Rabisna. Shkalim is exciting, no? I'm seeing everybody was dreading Shkalim. It's like, it's really, right? Yeah, okay, I think you're just all overwhelmed. You're all overwhelmed. Okay, so the Gemara said the following. Amri B'shin Ben Bisna, maybe, no, it's just amazing, just from an accounting, from an auditing perspective, to see, like, the inner workings of the, okay, whatever. So, fine, it says Rabbi Shimon, Rabbi Bisna, maybe Ma'os U'mechalin Alabin. Oh, what would they do? They would take money, we'll say, this, here's how they would do it. They would take money literally and redeem it on the structure. Now, what does this mean? Take a look at the last Tiklin Charetin. This is actually very interesting. Look at Tiklin Charetin. Amr Rabbi Shimon Bar Bisna, maybe Ma'os U'mechalin Abinyon. Dahokin Amrina Bebavli Meseches Mi'ilo. Listen to this process. Amr Shmuel, Bonin Bechorabosai, when they would, and we saw a little bit already about this yesterday and the day before, when they would build unconsecrated. Remember, also we saw this a little bit yesterday, or was it the day before, where the Shulchani, right, the money changers would be the one who would advance the money ultimately to the builders. Everything was done bichol in an unconsecrated way. The achakach makdishin. So the most like when the artisans would build something, the project itself was chol, was unconsecrated. It would only be consecrated when after it was finally built. Now turn the page, even though we haven't finished yet. Actually, fine. Turn the page. Tiklin Charetin. Kilomar kishehin bonin bebedek habayis hayukonin kol tzarcha abin mimos chulin. When they would go ahead and build any construction project, everything was bought from unconsecrated money. Like we saw yesterday, you always had people who fronted the money for the Beis HaMikdash. Ula achar shenigmar, meaning Tiklin Charetin, top left-hand corner, and when after the construction was finished, hayu makdishin also. Then they would sanctify the project. Kain hayu, excuse me, also kain, Hayu makdishin also kain shahayu mevien maoshal hektish kashir dmei kol abinyan vashevach sheshbichu haomnin bebinyan uschar haomnin ואמר שתאכל קידושה שיש במאוס הללו על הבניין ונמצאו קדוש והמאוס יצאו לחולין ופורין מהן שכרן. People say, what would they do? This is amazing. So if there was a construction project in Beis HaMikdash, somebody else would front the money. One of the money changers was someone else. Everything would be done essentially with chulin money in a state of chulin. When the project was completed, the Beis HaMikdash would take its pile of money, and what would it do? It would transfer the sanctity of the money onto the structure. So it would say, again, the structure now becomes kadosh, the money becomes chulin. The Gemara is suggesting that's the money we're referring to over here. So when they went ahead, and the artisans are there for one purpose, and that is to build, right? They're there to make money. For the Beis HaMikdash, they're there to build. So the Gemara says, it's not a problem. Here's how we have the money. So they built. Everything they built was in a state of chulin. Then what happens when the project is finished? We then go out and Beis HaMikdash takes its money. It says, this money is kodesh. We now vest the structure with sanctity. So therefore, the financial sanctity goes to the structure, which means now the money is chulin. Oh, says the Gemara, not the money is chulin. What did the Beis HaMikdash do next for the artisans? Then they would take the ketores, transfer the sanctity, essentially redeem the ketores with the money, which means transfer the sanctity of the ketores with the money. Then they would give the ketores ultimately to the artisans. So in fact, they were deconsecrating the ketores on money that was chulin. Interestingly enough, it was money that was once kodesh, now became chulin, and now is once again becoming kodesh through the consecration of the ketores. Really amazing. It's the top of Yud Aleph on the days. Umevi ketores, and therefore umechale ale, and therefore you go ahead and then you deconsecrate the ketores on the money. V'nosnin osa le'umnin biskaran, and the umnin, the artisans, are given this ketores as their wages. So the Gemara says the following, osan ha'maos, Maya Subahan. So what do you do with this money? So I'll say, just out of curiosity. So now again, so we know what the process is gonna happen. Meaning, so interestingly enough, we assume that what they would do with the money is they would then take that money and do what? What would they do in the Mishnah? They would take that money and then buy back the ketores from the umnin, right? They would buy, but no, they're not doing that. Why? Because remember, which monies would they use to buy back the ketores? New chatzi shekels. New chatzi shekel. So it's such a fascinating process. So that's old money that they just used. So they want to use new money, new chatzi shekels, to buy back the ketores. And Gemara says, what did they do with the consecrated money? What did they do with the money that was vested with ketores kedusha? So Gemara says, oh, I'll tell you what they did with it. So Maya Asan Bohen, Rabbi Omer Rabbi says, Omer Ani, yinasnu lebeis garmu ulebeis avatinas. They would give it to the families of Garmu and the families of Avatinas. And I will say, who are the families of Garmu and Avatinas? These were the families that were responsible for making the ketores and making the lechem aparim. The Gemara in Maseches Tainis speaks about them. So we'll say, remember, no one knew how to make the ketores. The ketores was a special blend, and it was actually kept secret, purposely kept secret, because they didn't want people to replicate it. Because remember, if you replicate ketores outside of the Beis HaMikdash, that carries with it a death penalty. So therefore, it was kept under wraps. And lechem aparim, also remember, lechem aparim was a very strange mold for bread. Remember how lechem aparim looked? It was like this. It was like that, but is that helpful? Right? But again, the inside was hollow. So you had like, it looked like two shelves, then come down, then like this, and the inside was hollow. Now, under normal circumstances, if you would bake bread like that, what would happen? It would collapse. So somehow, Avatinas was the lechem aponim, Garmu was the ketores. So both of these families guarded these secrets for generations. So the Gemara says that they would go ahead and they would give these monies to Beis Garmu, Beis Avatinas, Shayu Bekim, Bekpitum HaKetores. They knew exactly how to make the ketores, Obema'as lechem aponim, and how to make the lechem aponim. And to make lechem upon him. So therefore, they were given these monies. Amr of Shlomo bar Rav Yitzchok, v'hein shiyu chayov. So we'll say, apparently, they were given these monies, again, bepashtus, not for their personal use, but they were given these monies to help with their particular responsibilities, to help with the ketores, to help with lechem upon him. So the Gemara goes, v'ayto. Amr of Shlomo bar Yitzchok, v'hein shiyu chayovin lahen ma'os misha'a rishona. The Rav will say, take a look at the Tiklan Charetin. So look what it says. It's in the wide lines now, about five lines into the wide lines. V'hein shu chayovin lemos mishor rishon. Kilomar, davka kishahayu chayovin lu'umnei beis havatinas ma'os mishon rishona. V'shaper mechalan ala ketoros v'amos yipulu v'truma yishana. So I will say, this is only assuming that the house of avatinas or the house of garmu were owed money. So I will say, remember, to make the lechem upon him, to make the ketoros requires expenses. So apparently there were times when these families again fronted the money. So what would we do now with the coins that were vested with ketoros kiddush? Remember again, the ketoros is given to the artisans. The money was now vested with ketoros kiddusha. What do we do with the money? We'd give it to the people, to the families of avatinas and garmu, assuming that what, that they had incurred expenses from the production of lechem aponim and ketoros. But obviously, if there are no outstanding expenses, we would not give them the money. Rabbi Chiya Barba says the following: Boi lo hayu chayavin lemos mishar rishona. So Rabbi Chiya Barba asks a very interesting question. He says same thing. What would they do with the coins? He says, therefore, you see that it doesn't have to be made in a klisharis. So I'm also saying, what's interesting over here is the following. What he's suggesting is, take a look at the Tikkun Charetin. Listen to this. Now, when we go ahead and we redeem back that ketores, so that ketores becomes kodesh, even though what? That ketores, as far as we're concerned, was not initially made in a kli sharis. So the Gemara says, Asa Rav Bibi, Asa Rav Bo, actually, B'shem Rav Chia, B'shem Rav Yosi, Mekaitzin Bahen Es HaMizbeach. Ultimately, what do we do with it? We use it. Look at the Tiklin Charetin. He says, "Mekaitzin b'anes hamizbeach kevan dein chalife mosar ketores sheba'a mitrumi yishana shesheire lekitzin hamizbeach lakei mekaitzin b'hamizbeach." So we'll say, the Gemara seems to be saying the same thing over here, which is that what would we do with it? We would use these monies. Again, it's all the same machlokas about what do we do with the money. So the first opinion said, we give the monies to the families of Avatinas and Garmu. Second family said, what do we do with the money? We use it for Kitzim Mizbeach. Kitzim Mizbeach seems to be like the go-to fund. When you have leftover monies and you're not exactly sure what to do with them, you give it to the Mizbeach Dessert Fund, which again is just a supplemental carbon fund. Rabbi Ba, Bar Kohen, Ba'i Kumi Rabbi Yosa, Machlefa Shitase, Rabbi Chiya Bar Ba. So we'll say the Rabbi Chiya Bar Kohen just said before Rabbi Yossi that the Shitos seem to be confused because the Shita of Rabbi Chiya Bar Ba is not as stated above. Taman, because later on we said Tzrichale v'kop Shitale. Beforehand, Rav Ba had a question about this, and now it seems to be Pasha to him. Had Tzrichale b'kli sharis, had Pshitale. The question was, does the ketores originally have to be made in a kli sharis? That was the kasha, the ka pshitala. But what was obvious to him was what? The pshitala became a mizbeach. So I'll say, here's what's interesting. So the fact that ketores has to be made in a kli sharis, that's obvious to everyone. Or I should say, that was the part that was pashit. The shayla, I'm sorry, I read that wrong. The question was, does ketores have to remain in a kli sharis? The part that was pashit was that leftover monies are used for ketza mizbeach. The ispalgun, Rabbi said, there is a machlokes, pitma bechulin. What happens if the ketores itself was compounded in a state of chulin? Rabbi said, take a look at the tiklin charetin. The ispalgun pitma bechulin, bekli chol. Rabbi said, an interesting shayla. What happens if you made ketores? How did you make ketores? You took these herbs and you took a mortar and pestle and you ground it up. What happens if it was made in a non-sanctified kli? What happens if it was made in a regular utensil? Is that ketores good or not? Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Chanina Amar Psula. Rabbi Yossi, the son of Rabbi Chanina, said it's possible. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi Omer Kshera. Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi says it's kosher. My time is Rabbi Yossi be Rabbi Chanina. Why does Rabbi Yossi say that it's good? Kodeshi shetehei havyaso bekodesh. So Rabbi Yossi, interestingly enough, Excuse me. He says it's possible. Why does Rabbi Yossi say that ketores made in a non-kli sharis, in a non-sanctified kli, is considered to be possible? Because we'll say the Torah uses the phrase kadoshi. Use the phrase that it is kadosh. So what does Rabbi Yossi understand that to mean? Kadoshi also means that what? Every stage of the process has to be bikidusha. And therefore, if you make ketores in a non-sanctified kli, then every stage of the process is not bikidusha, and therefore it's possible. My time to Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. Why does Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi say that lemaisa, even if it's made in a non-kli sharis, the ketores is still good? Kodeshi, he says, what does it mean that it should be kodesh? Shetei ba'a mitshumas halishka. So kodesh means what a kodesh Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, what Rabbi will say? That it has to be purchased with sanctified funds. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, kodeshi is not telling you about the process of production of victors, but rather is what? Is telling you about the manner in which it must be purchased. So they're both, so the fundamental machlok between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi is how to interpret the phrase kodeshi. According to Rabbi Yossi, means every stage must be done bikidusha, which means that the ketores has to be done in the klisharis. According to Rabbi Yossi, no. Kodeshi just means what? It has to be purchased with sanctified funds. And therefore, lemaisa, if it's purchased sanctified funds, even if it's made in a regular, unconsecrated kli, it's still good. So the Gemara says, Am Rabbi Yossi bei Rabbi Bun, Asya Rabbi Yossi ben Chanina kishmuel. Rabbi Yossi, so says Rabbi Yossi name Rabbi Bun, that Rabbi Yossi follows the position of Shmuel. For Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi, ki Rabbi Yochanan, and Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi holds like Rabbi Yochanan. Ditanina, because we learned, Hamakdish nechasav, if one consecrates his possessions, Vahayu bohen dvarim ru'uyin the karbanos, and he had within his possessions certain things that are fit for sacrificial use, dvarim ru'uyin the karbanos sibur, things that were fit for sacrificial use, for communal use, Rabbi Yochanan Omer Ketores, Rabbi Yehoshia Tipater Bu'uman Mishal Beisavatinas Shainotol Bischaro Ketores. I will say, interestingly enough, so the Gemara says, so I will say, what's the case? Ruvain is makdish his possessions. And what happens? He goes, so therefore, I give all my possessions to the Beis HaMikdash. The Braisa says, if among my possessions are things that can be used for sacrificial service, they're used. Now, what would be among my possessions that would be fit for sacrificial service? So Rabbi Yochanan says, oh, you know what it means? If I have ketores. I have ketores in my possession. So Rabbi Yochanan, what do you see from there? You see, now if I have ketores in my possession, bepashtos what? That was not made in the kli sharis. And yet what? Rabbi Yochanan says it could still be used. Oh, so you see that Rabbi Yochanan and Rabbi Yossi are on the same level, hold the same thing, which is what? That ketores need not be made within a kli sharis. On the other hand, Rabbi Hoshaya says, no, what's the case? The case could be referring to, who's the person we're referring to over here? Oh, a member of the Avatinas household. So remember, the Avatinas family did what, Rabbi Hoshaya? The Avatinas family made ketores. Oh, so often they were given surplus ketores. Now, the surplus ketores that they were given was what, Rabbi Hoshaya? Was made within a kli sharis because it was made for Beis HaMikdash purposes. That's a case of where a person could have ketores within their personal possessions, but yet what? But it would still be usable for the Beis HaMikdash. So we'll say fundamental machlokes. Ud Rabbi Yossi bar Chanina, Bei Rabbi Chanina, Kishmuel, and Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Chanina holds like Shmuel, Do Amar Rav Huna B'Shem Shmuel, Machteshes Asu Osa, Kikli Sharis Lakodesh. Because it said in the name of Shmuel, that a machteshes, Rabbi Yossi, is like a grinder. There's a better word for it, but okay. A grinder, they made it like a kli sharis. Now I will say, what does that mean? That ultimately what they're saying over here is that the machteshes has to be like a grinder, meaning the machteshes itself has to be a kli sharis. What Shmuel is saying over here is that even when you grind up the herbs for the ketores, that must be done in a kli sharis. That's the position of Shmuel, which is like the position of Rabbi Yossi. Am Rabbi Yossi bei Rabbi Bun, Amra Rabbi Chuna kumei Rabbi Yossi, Davar shekidesh bekli sharis nifta. If something was made in a kli sharis, can it ultimately be redeemed? Amar lei, Velo de Shmueli, the Shmuel Amar Kal Hubamosar, the Ispalgun, Kal Hubamosar, but is this not the position of Shmuel? That Shmuel holds that this is a leniency that was affected by leftover items that they indeed can be redeemed. the Ispalgun, because they argued, Hosiru Tamimim, right, Rabbi Yossi, remember this actually refers to over here, that usually at the end of the year, there were leftover karbanos tamidin as well. Right, the Beis Hamikdash purchased animals for karbanos, they were leftover tamidim. So what do you do with these leftover tamidim? Shmuel omer niftin kitmimin. Shmuel says they can be redeemed. Rabbi Yochanan omer niftin kipsulim mikdash. Rabbi Yochanan says they are left over, they are redeemed like psulim mikdash. Rabbi Yossi, what happens to psulim mikdashim? Now remember, that's what's left over. Psulim mikdashin are the animals that are let out to graze and have to develop a mum. And only once they develop a mum can you go out and sell the animal and then redeem its value. Hosiru seirim, what happens if there are seirim leftovers? Now I will say again, seirim over here refers to karbanos achatos. Al daite de Shmuel, im ola niftis lo koshkin chatos. According to Shmuel, if an ola can be redeemed, because that's what he just said before, then certainly a chatos can be redeemed. Al daite de Rabbi Yochanan, so one opinion says that we let the animals go out to graze, and once they develop a mum, then you could redeem them. Others say, no, you use them actually for additional karbanos. Someone says, one second. The kashya, yesh chatas shekreva ola. Rabbi says, how can you do that? This is talking about leftover chatas animals. A leftover chatas animal, how can you offer that up as an ola? It's actually very interesting. Amar Rabbi Yossi, no, shanya. I'll tell you something interesting. A communal chatas is different than a personal chatas. Why? She'en karbanos tzibor ein nikba'in ela b'shchita. Rabosai, communal offerings really only are vested with their identity when? At the time of the actual slaughtering. And therefore, again, as long as the animal has not been slaughtered, you can actually switch the designation of an animal. So even though this animal was originally designated as a chatas, until the time of shchita, you could switch its designation. So you could, again, this is only by communal offerings. This is not by personal offerings. Individual offerings, their identity is designated when you designate it. Therefore, you can't switch it. Communal offerings can be switched up until the time of Shechita. Amar Rav Chiya, Tanai Beisdin hu, ala Moser Shikrivu Olos. And Moser, furthermore, the Gemara says, is that Tanai Beisdin. Beisdin made a stipulation that any leftover karbanos can always be offered up as could always be offered up as an olah. Rabbi, I'll tell you halacha lemaisa, just so you should know, how do we paskin in the machlokis between Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Yoshua ben Levi? We paskin that lemaisa, ketores must be created, must even be chopped up, even in within a klishari. So if you made ketores in your backyard or in your house, that would not be good. Ketores from the beginning of its process must be done in a klishari. Shkoyach.